Hey friends, can I introduce you to our newest podcast sponsor, Time for Learning? And Time for Learning supports a flexible, personalized homeschool experience for your family. What I love is it's an all-in-one curriculum. It's online and everything you need to teach pre-K all the way to 12th grade. And flexibility, I mean, that's the key here. You can travel, you can explore your kids' passions and hobbies without the constraints of traditional school hours. And so you can get started with a monthly plan to see if it's right for your family and multiple students. Yep, you can do that. You can save up to 30% by opting for an annual plan. And they also have stay on track features, which is templates for transcripts, grades, diplomas, just makes it easy to match the homeschool requirements in all 50 states. And get this, they have been in business 20 years and served over 1 million students. What I also love and what I plan on doing in my house, it's a great way if you don't homeschool, just to supplement. Things you can do in the afternoon, you can do it over the summer to bridge gaps. And so I'm excited about doing that with my youngest. So check it out. If you're curious if Time for Learning is right for your family, visit timeforlearning.com. That's time4learning.com to explore their curriculum and find the perfect plan for your student. You can get started with a monthly subscription to see just how much your kids enjoy learning on their own terms. This is Cynthia Ganoff, and you are listening to the Mesmerized Podcast. Hey friends, welcome to the podcast and welcome to this little series that I hope you're enjoying as much as I am, where we are talking about my new book, How'd I Miss That? But really we're talking to people from my past, people in my family, people who make me laugh, and we're just having a good time with good conversations. And today, you guys, my mom is on the podcast and you are going to love her because she's so funny. She was so nervous to come on. She kept saying she's going to tank my ratings. And I was like, listen, I don't know what the ratings are anyway. So we got nothing to lose, but we got a good chuckle over that. But she's going to talk to us about parenting and marriage and just doing the hard things. And man, some great wisdom coming up, a whole lot of laughs. And so I would say more, but listen, my family's leaving for Disney in about an hour and 20 minutes and I'm going to miss a plane. So off to Disney we go. Can't wait for you to hear this podcast. Would love for you to share it with your friends. And of course, if you haven't pre-ordered a book, it would mean so much to me if you would grab a copy of How'd I Miss That. Okay, here we go with my mom, Dorothy Wilkinson.
Hi, Cynthia.
Third time's a charm. We've restarted this thing three times. I don't think this is a good sign.
I don't think it is either. I've told you I was scared to death because I thought your ratings were going to plummet when they hear that your mother's on here.
I don't know.
I have to tell you, can you believe how weird this is? All those years I prayed for you as you were growing up through grade school and high school and everything, how God would use you, never dreamed that you would be the queen of podcasts. I mean, I didn't even know what a podcast was.
Me neither.
In fact, there probably wasn't podcasts back then.
No, there definitely weren't. I'm not sure you know what one is now, if we're honest.
I'm not either. I'm not. After trying three times to get on.
Trying to get you to cut and paste a link and get into the podcast.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a process, everyone, but we're here.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So that was kind of the idea behind this series on the podcast, was that I was going to bring in people that are talked about, friends, and blasts from the past. And so it's been fun as we're talking kind of through the book and just talking out life to connect with so many people. And so I thought, well, of course we're going to bring out my mom. And you, and on behalf of the family, have a complaint to lodge about me writing books in particular, how you're referenced. Is that correct?
Yes. Many times you've thrown us under the bus. And in this most recent book, and I want the audience to hear this, you really throw us under the bus, because you say that you have absolutely no culture. No culture. And I just want to remind you of the cultural things that we exposed you to. Can I do that?
No, please.
Do you remember Pampa, Texas, and how we rode down the hill on pieces of cardboard? Do you remember floating down the Rio Grande on a hovercraft, or riding on the back of a dirt bike with your brother? Or you remember the times that we snuck off to Juarez? Mm-hmm. When Dad said, I don't want you girls going to Juarez. And we went over there And we went to the big market. We bought those cheap fake purses. And the time that we almost locked the keys in the car.
I remember all of it.
I exposed you to a lot of culture. You just didn't absorb it.
I think you lost us all at Las Cruces, Juarez, Mexico, cardboard boxes. I mean, neat. I think the case is concluded at that. But we had a lot of fun. We did. And I'm going to tell you something else behind the scenes. So I grew up in El Paso. My mom and dad are from that area, everyone. And El Paso, if you don't know this, if you're not in Texas, it's border, literally on the border of Mexico and New Mexico. And so to get over to Juarez is, a 10-minute drive, but you're crossing into another country. And in recent years, it's been very dangerous. When I was younger there, it was not. However, y'all are going to die when I tell you this. My mom and I went there sometimes and got pedicures.
Yes. It's a wonder we're still alive.
Barely.
Well, and when I was young, just married and we lived there, I would go over and get my hair done over there. And they would wash it and shampoo it in beer so it would last all week long.
Oh, my God. Well, there you go. There you go. That's hilarious. Well, Mom, thanks for being here. I'm sorry that you feel as though y'all have been thrown under the bus. And you have. Let's talk about this. Did you think that, like, growing up, were you like, this girl's going to write a book one day, or this girl's like, was I a writer? Was I one that enjoyed sitting and contemplating thoughts? Tell us about that.
Never.
Okay. Well,
in fact, when you were grade school, junior high, and you would study for a test, you would just go to the end of the chapter. You wouldn't read the whole thing. You know, you just go to the end of the chapter and try to get the message. And I had to go over and over and over with it. So no, for you to write a book, never, never. Now, you've always been a person with lots of words. And so I'm not surprised that you do podcasts or that you speak, but never write a book. But, you know, like I said at the beginning, I just prayed, God, you know, how are you going to use her? Use her some way mighty, you know, as an adult to follow you and to share your message. And Who knew?
Well, I'm so thankful for all you and Dad have done over the years, and the fact that you're showing up on this podcast and you don't even exactly know what a podcast is, although you listen to mine some.
I do.
And so we're going to talk about a few things, and really the hope is just to laugh a little bit, give some behind the scenes on the book, but also just growing up. And I think you have such wisdom, and so I'm excited for you to share some of that. So let's talk parenting first. And I don't know if you read the part in the book where I talked about the little pink journal that you gave me. Yes. And when
I'm glad you remember, because I had no clue that I did.
Oh, I still have it. So you gave me a little pink journal when Kate was born. Kate is what, 22 now? And so almost 23. And so you gave it to me and I still have it. And you said this is for Mother's Day, your first Mother's Day as a mom. And I am going to give you this so you can journal your days with your daughter. And so I journaled approximately four things, like four different dates. And then that was the end of it for me. Apparently I was a bad journaler, but in this book, I kind of write a today journal, like things that I would have wanted to tell myself back then. Now 22 years into parenting, things, if I could say like, hey, here's some things I wish I would have known. And so, that's in the book. You can read it in the book, everyone. But I'm just curious with you, like if you could tell young Cynthia some parenting advice, or young anyone listening, as someone who's raised three kids, I have twin brothers, everyone, that are 5 years older than I am. And what would be your parenting advice?
Wow. Well, my first answer would be pray. You know, that's a given. But, you know, I think parenting today is challenging. I mean, there's so many options, good options, you know, for kids. I mean, all kinds of sports events, academic events, technology. And I think that, you know, all that boils down, those are good things, but parents have to make choices. And I love the sentence that you put in that chapter where you said your best parenting advice that somebody gave you was, what do you want your child to look like 25 years from now? And then move toward that. And I think that's really true. I think that today that parents have to evaluate. And what is urgent in the moment, what seems so urgent in the moment, is really not that urgent. You know, it's not about the nicest birthday party because so-and-so had one. You know, it's not about what kind of prom dress, even though those things are important and they're fun, but they are not the most important thing, and yet we seem to make that the most important thing. And I would say another thing is, don't compare. Mm. Have good friends that you can share honestly with, that you can say, my child excels in this, but I'm really struggling here. And that also that you can talk with them. I see that your child is struggling here, and you pray for each other, but you also can be authentic with each other, and you need a sounding board. Sometimes you get so involved with it, you know, that you can't really see it. And so I think it's really important to have friends that you can share those struggles with. And then I think you just pray over your choices. You know, what is best for our family? Is it sports? Is it not doing sports this semester, you know, so that you look at the long term and what is most important. And, you know, you had a friend on recently that said something that I thought was really, really wise, because relationships are so important today, and they can either be healthy or they cannot be healthy. And this person was saying at the time that her daughter was kind of an ugly duckling and in an awkward stage, and she wanted to fix everything for her daughter. And then God really revealed to her that she needed to pray for the other girls, pray for the enemies. And I think that's, you know, that's not easy for us to do, but I think that's so wise. I think, first of all, it's the right thing to do. Second of all, I think it's a lesson for your children. You know, if you let them know, okay, we're going to pray for those girls if they're being mean to you, or we're going to pray for this situation or whatever that's unfair. I think that's a life lesson, you know, that you can learn. So I would just say, and then, you know, you also point out something in that chapter about the in-between moments. And I've thought about that. Do you remember when you were probably in junior high and you would come in the afternoon, you'd throw your books in the chair in the den?
Yeah.
And I'd say, Cynthia, go put your books in your room. Uh-huh. It finally dawned on me that one day, you know, those books aren't going to be there. Why am I making an issue the minute you walk in the door over those books when I could be saying to you, tell me about your day. Mm-hmm. What happened? You know, what's going on in your life? What's happening with your friends? Those in-between moments that are not high points, you know, of childhood.
But they matter. Yeah.
Yeah. So those are just some things I think.
I like all of that. And I like that. And I think I talk about this in the book, but I talk about this when I speak a lot of just, we live in a culture that wants us, it convinces us that things are urgent all the time. And I think that you have to be countercultural, and you have to stop and say, is this urgent? Maybe, maybe not, but is it eternal? And there's a lot of places where I've allowed urgency in my life that wasn't eternal. And that doesn't mean that I'm not going to still help my daughter find a prom dress, and I'm not going to need to cook dinner. There's reality still within the day of things we have to do. But the things that we allow to undo us and to be strung out about, to, you know, lose sleep over, I mean, to be anxious about, like, are these things that are going to matter later? Are they eternal? And if they are eternal, then we step into that, right? And we figure out what that looks like. But mm-hmm. I love that you're saying that. And also, I love that you're saying, like, was that the hill to die on? My book bag being in the wrong chair. And that's funny because I don't remember you complaining. I remember exactly that chair and where it sat. And I always dump my stuff. I really don't remember you complaining about it much. I guess you caught yourself early on. But there are those things as a mom now that I've been a mom for 22 years, whatever. I want my kids to leave my house one day, and we're going to be known for something. May it not be known for the things that don't matter, right? The house looking perfect, the bedtime is being met, the making me look good. I mean, how often are we tempted to overparent things because it's making us look bad or whatever? I just don't want to be known for those things. And I think it's easy to get caught up in the moment in parenting, and these are such urgent, important things. And the thing is it? So if you're going to be known for something as a mom, be known for someone who points your kids to the Lord, and that you care about the things that really, really matter. So, yeah.
You know, I think a lot of it's based on expectations. I think there's comparisons, you know, that we should not compare. Later on, we're going to talk about piano. But, you know, you had a good friend who was an incredible pianist. And we'll laugh about this a little
bit. And I was also?
No. No.
Oh, okay.
And I wanted to be. And I compared you, you know, to that person. I put expectations on you and on myself. And I think that, you know, we impose expectations on our kids and on ourselves that shouldn't be there, you know, and that puts stress and pressure. And again, I guess bottom line I'm saying is all of this takes time. And if you don't have time to evaluate and really look at what's important, what's eternal, then we miss the spinach in our teeth and they'll catch them when they see the book.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, now that you brought up piano, one, I thought I was good, but apparently I'm being made aware of the fact I was not. And no, jokingly, I was not good. And I know exactly who you're talking
about. I've not heard you play anything in 25 years.
Well, even when I did, it wasn't that great. I think I got caught up in the Moonlight Sonata in a recital. I'm surprised we're not all still sitting there. I couldn't remember the ending of it. And it is funny because, you know, you were the church pianist and you still play the piano and so beautifully. And it's, and my piano teacher, she was just heinous, Mom. Like, of all the people in El Paso, you picked the heinous teacher. And then my friend who was in there, and the friend, by the way, that she's comparing me to, let's just take it a step further. Shout out, Courtney. Not only was she fabulous on the piano, she graduated valedictorian. She went to Stanford, and she's a surgeon. Okay, guys, like, nobody's keeping up with Courtney. So there was that. But would you tell everybody, was Miss Wade my piano teacher? She was awful, and you know it, and you can admit it now because you had an incident with her, and you should come clean on it.
Ooh, you're going to put me on the spot, aren't you?
It's in the book.
She was supposed to be the best. I knew she was tough, but I thought you needed tough. But tough didn't work. You just, you know, you never passed the theory test. And so finally one day she said to me, I think your daughter has some learning difficulties. And I was very respectful and I didn't say otherwise, but I knew. I said, it's just, you know, she's not motivated. She doesn't like theory. And if she doesn't like it, she's not going to do it. And fast forward, what, 10 years? We saw her in Luby's cafeteria one day. And we go over and we speak to her and Lord, please forgive me. And I have to make a point of letting her know that you just graduated from law school, that you did not have learning difficulties. Not my best moment. Not my best moment.
If that isn't a true mom, being a mom, and it is, you guys, and she's not kidding. They have these theory tests. And if you don't know what theory is, I mean, what's theory? It's like the
BGGDF or whatever.
Yeah, it's the nuts and bolts behind music. And they would have theory tests every year. Now, can we have a show of hands who had to take a stupid theory test? Yeah, that's nobody but me and Courtney. And she always did great on them. Mm-hmm. And I took them, I bet you I took them every year for how many years? 7 or 8 years probably?
Years. Yeah.
I never passed one. Never. And which is kind of funny because, I mean, I'm a pretty decent student now, or I was, and I never passed one. And so, yeah, our piano teacher, God rest her soul, was like, there's something up with this kid. And then my mom, as always a mom, it never changes, man. You insult our kids, we're going to let you know. That wouldn't. That,
yeah, I defended you. I had to let her know that you were not a dummy, that you had just graduated from law school.
Just completely and wholly a horrible pianist.
Oh, not the best moment.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on and let's talk about marriage. And I don't write a, well, she's already laughing, so I don't feel good about this. I don't ever think I'll write a marriage book. I mean, talk about just setting yourself up to fail. But I do like to put a chapter or two here and there, talk about marriage. And so I did in this book. And did you read that, Mom, where I talked about Mike and really likening our marriage to barbecue?
I love that analogy. It is so perfect for you and Mike. And it's so perfect in Texas. You know, I mean, because, well, barbecue is everything. And that's everything to Mike. And the discipline of it and the technique. And, I mean, he takes it serious. But, you know, you had some good analogies there. You talk about it being slow
and low
versus a big fire or spark. And, you know, I thought it was interesting when you mentioned about a spark, that we all want a spark in our marriage, but sparks don't last. Sparks are here and gone quick, you know. But it's the coals underneath, or the gas element underneath. It's low and slow. And that's what marriage needs to be. If it's always a spark, there's not a lot of depth to it. And, you know, my word about marriage is a commitment. And that's not a popular word now. I mean, we don't commit to the same ice cream flavor or, you know, anything else. My concern is the biggest detriment to marriages today is overcommitment. And that's not overcommitment to marriage, but overcommitment, period. And you know, we talked about evaluations with evaluating where you want your kid to be and what to do. And I think the same thing is so true. You mentioned about in cooking barbecue where you stall. And I'm not sure I understand that term. But I think there's times in marriage where marriage is stall. But that is a really crucial time to step back and evaluate and say, okay, we need to get out of this stall.
Yeah. The stall, like when I was referring to it in the book, I'm talking about, yes, my husband loves to smoke barbecue. And if you're not from Texas, we're very serious in Texas about barbecue. And so I laughingly say one of the meanest things I've ever said to Mike was that all barbecue tastes the same to me. And he was like, heresy, what are we doing here? But when he will be smoking barbecue, sometimes it'll hit a stall, and that basically means it stops cooking. And you've been doing this for, you know, 10 hours, and all of a sudden it stops cooking and nothing's happening. And there's this tendency to want to run in and fire up the heat and figure it out. And I kind of liken that to marriage. Like there's some times where it feels like a stall where you're like, oh my gosh, did everything go to waste? There's no spark. There's, you know, we don't feel like we have a lot in common, all these, and how this isn't the time to turn up the flame, like, and burn down the place over it, right? This is the time to stay steady and committed. And so that was kind of there's more to that in the book. But I'm just curious, you got married when you were like 9. So tell everybody about that, Mom. And then, we'll go from there.
Seriously?
No, I'm dead serious. Tell everybody, Dorothy.
Well, okay. Well, let me start by saying that...
Or disclaimer.
Exactly. That I graduated from high school when I was 16 and went away to college when I was 17. Okay. Not because I was brilliant, but for other reasons. And so then, not bad reasons, but then.
And she was very smart, but go on.
I was headed to Baylor. And that summer I met Tom and we fell in love. And so I didn't go to Baylor. I went to UTEP instead.
University of Texas, El Paso.
That's right.
How old were you? How old were you when you got married?
I was 17, but I was a sophomore in college. Does that count for you?
We're lucky Dad's not in jail. Isn't that? I think you go to jail for those things now because Dad's 5 years older.
Okay. Well,
it was hard growing up without a dad who was in prison the first 10 years of my life, but no. Well, yes, they did get married young. And Dorothy always tells my kids, like when they were in high school, she's like, now I need you to know that I was already in college. And I'm like, it's fine. Kate hasn't even had a date, Mom. I don't think she's getting married and Brett's fine, but we laugh about that. But now
but it's all worked out.
I mean, y'all are still married.
Well, 64
How many years?
64.
64 years.
Yes.
Okay. And you kind of alluded to some of your marriage advice based on what I wrote, but any other marriage advice based on what you know to be true, or even just things you've seen change in marriage over the years?
Yeah, as I started, you know, I said commitment, and that's just, you know, that's the basis of it. You go through all these stages. I'll never forget, Dad and I were sitting out on the patio in El Paso, and I guess you kids were teenagers. Maybe the boys were already in college. I don't know. My mother was in a nursing home, and, you know, our plates were full. I was working full-time at the church, and he, you know. And I turned to him, and I said, life is nothing but a series of changes. And he looked at me like, well, that was profound. Where did that come from? You know?
Yeah.
And now I wonder where it did. But that is so true. And marriage is all these stages. And so many of the stages revolve around children or jobs or moving or whatever, you know. And you got to work through all those stages. One of the things I would say to people today is don't ruminate. Don't build your case. Don't go over and over and over and over all the things that have bugged you, that he's done wrong or she's done wrong, or, you know, didn't do, you know, things they didn't do that you wish they had. You know, at my age, I pray that I don't forget. But at your age, I think you pray that you do forget all those things. You know, Lord, help me not to remember those. But that, like you say in the book, just steady, consistent, faithful, is so important today. It doesn't have to be the big fire or the spark or whatever. It just needs to be good quality relationships.
Yeah, yeah. And you'll find what you're looking for in marriage. If you're looking for the negative and you're looking for the building your case, to your point, and, you know, he's always so unthoughtful. Well, you're going to find 30 examples probably where that was, you're looking through the lens of unthoughtfulness, or you have an opportunity to look through the lens of gratefulness and, or whatever it is. And that's not to ignore that there aren't realities in marriage, and there are realities, there's hard places. And that goes back to commitment, right? And I just think that your generation, I don't know, I just feel like you guys did it really well. And, you know, I even think of the Leave It to Beaver, but, you know, not that we all have to be staying at home and have, but just that sense of family and community and come home and support each other. And I don't know, it just feels like back in the day, it was, the standard was different than what it is now. And, so I wrote in the end of the book, the end of the chapter on marriage, I wrote a barbecue benediction. I have no idea why I wrote a benediction, but nonetheless I did. I'm going to read it. Okay. You ready, Mom?
Okay.
Lord, grant me the serenity to accept the things I can't control, like brisket that's in a stall and a husband who's clueless that company is coming in an hour. Give me the courage to trim the fat, but keep the flavor, whether that's on a slab of meat or in my salty attitude. And the wisdom to know when to dive in or when to walk away and let it rest, especially when he asks questions like, what'd you do all day? Help me to accept the stalls and smoke are part of the process and trust that a slow and low philosophy can make even the toughest cuts tender over time. Amen. And pass the sauce.
Love it. Let me say one last thing.
Yeah.
Laugh. How many times have you and Kelly's my daughter-in-law, and I have texted each other when we were getting ready to have somebody come over for dinner or some big event at our house or whatever, and we've wanted our husbands to help us either dust or vacuum or mop the kitchen floor or whatever, and what are they doing?
Like cleaning the toolbox.
Yeah, rearranging the tools in the toolbox.
Yeah.
Or the yard equipment in the shed. Yeah. And,
like,
you know,
thank you. Helpful.
We've laughed through the years, and I think you just got to laugh. And I wrote this statement down because I love this. Each day, this is from you in that chapter, each day we're handed the choice to either throw gasoline on the fire or to keep the heat low and the grace high. And everybody needs to put that on a sticky and put that on their mirror, because that's a great word.
Thank you. All right. Well, thank you for staying married. It's easy to be married 65 years when you get married when you're 14. So,
yeah.
I think she just tried to tell me to shut up. Hey, will you tell them, this is an intermission moment before we go to our last topic. Will you tell them about the time when you cussed?
Oh, you kids, all the great things that I did as a mother. What do you remember?
When you cussed.
The damn.
One time, which is better than most of us can say. But Dorothy does not a cusser. But boy, she threw it down. And not a bad cuss, you guys. I think I actually wrote about it in my first book. It wasn't a bad cuss. Like, she didn't drop an F-bomb. It was kind of like a, maybe starts with a D, that
well,
one maybe.
I just said it.
Oh, you did? I didn't hear you. Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
You may have to edit that.
Yeah,
yes.
We're going to talk about that today.
You know, when I would get really mad, particularly at the boys, when they were teenagers and everything, and, you know, they were too big to whatever. And I, when I really got mad, I stopped my foot. And one day I was so mad at them, whatever. And one of them, they knew that I was getting ready to stomp my foot. One of them came up behind me and picked me up off the floor. And the other one said, okay, go ahead, Corey, you can do it. And it made me so mad that I said, damn. Yeah. And has anybody ever forgotten it? No.
No. I'm in therapy over it. Still, I mean, anytime I cuss, I just say I'm sorry. It's genetic. My mom, I grew up in a cussing home.
You need therapy. Yeah. Oh.
Okay, let's go to the last thing. In the chapter where I talk about how uncultured we are, and you're really put out about it, it was interesting because I ended it, and I was going to read a little bit, and I'll see if I can find it while you're talking. But I kind of ended it with all the lack of culture jokes and all that. I'm so thankful I lived in a house where we were taught to, and really not even taught. It was modeled to go do the things, do the hard things, do the things that you're called to do, even when it's inconvenient and difficult. And I think about you, Mom, like you were on church staff. And I don't mean like the church secretary, which is great if you were, but you were literally like second in command under the pastor back when there was no women being second in command under the pastor. And you were on the stage doing announcements and all those things. And I love it because you weren't a renegade. You weren't like, there's a place for women. That wasn't it. You were just so talented and so qualified that you were asked to be a part of, so much through that church. And so I just love that you did that. And that you showed us that we can do hard things. We can step out in faith and we can trust God. So talk to us just a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, when I was a freshman in college, before I got married at 14,
yeah,
I really felt called to ministry, but had no idea how it was going to, you know, work out. And it was really in my mid-30s when it finally worked out, you know, where our minister of education at First El Paso called me and said, would you be our preschool children's minister? And I said, well, what does that involve? And he said, just go around on Sunday mornings and make sure everything's okay. And that was a real blonde moment because, you know, duh, that's not exactly what you have to do. But that led into being minister of education at First Baptist Church, going to conferences where I was the only woman there, earning respect from men in the church. We had a men's Sunday school class that, you know, I didn't go into the class until I was invited to. I had to earn my right to do that because women in ministry were not, you know, just not that prevalent at that time. And so it was hard, but it was a calling. And in fact, they didn't have my title as a minister. They called me director of education. And we did that on purpose so that it wouldn't offend anybody. But finally I thought, you know, if I haven't earned through my actions the right to be called a minister, then I'm not doing it right. And so, you know, they finally changed it. But it really, and I had not been to seminary. The fact, though, that we moved around with your dad's job, which I never wanted to do, but we were involved in different churches, that was my seminary education, just to see how different churches worked, and I did different things in different ones. But it was really a learning experience. And it was not easy, you know, being a woman on staff back then, you know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. And so it was hard, but, oh, so worthwhile and love. And so, you know, I just thank the Lord every day for allowing me to have those experiences.
Yeah. I talk in that chapter about roller coasters and how I don't like to ride on roller coasters. And I'm the one who will sit on the bench and hold your stuff while you go on the ride, and how even making fun of y'all for giving us no culture, which you proved at the top of this podcast when you said we rode boxes down sandhills. So there you go, everyone. But I was talking about roller coasters and how in our spiritual life and our faith, like don't sit out the ride. And I said this, my parents modeled a faith that wasn't content with the sidelines. They got messy, made mistakes, and over again, we watched them buckle up for a tumultuous ride. They didn't just talk about faith, they lived it, showing us how to wrestle through the tension of wanting to cling to the bench that feels safe, but knowing that's not where God does his best work. What would you say to someone who's listening to this that is nervous about stepping out, that's nervous about doing the thing they're called to, whether like for our family, Mike and I, it's foster care or whatever that is, maybe a job change. Maybe the Lord's calling them to give more money than it feels safe to give. Maybe it's letting go of some control things with their kids. Like, what would you say to someone who's just struggling to walk into that and trust the Lord and to do the hard things?
Do it. You know, one of my favorite, and I'll do this briefly, one of my favorite Bible stories is Ananias in the New Testament. When God calls Ananias and says, Ananias, I want you to go to Saul. Saul just had his Damascus Road experience. And, you know, he was killing the Christians. He was going to Tarsus to kill the Christians. And Ananias says, and he, the Lord says, Ananias. And he says, yes, Lord. He hears God's voice. He knows God's voice. And then God tells him what he wants him to do. I want you to go to Saul. And he says, but Lord, that's his response. Lord, he could kill me. And God tells him why. I want him to evangelize the Gentiles and the Jews. God doesn't always tell us why. But his third response was complete obedience. And that was a hard thing. You know, I mean, he didn't know what would happen if he went, but he did. But you know, his name would have been there in the Bible had he not done that. And I say to anybody, don't sit on the bench. You know, you and I have talked about this, Cynthia. You have friends, and some of them are leaders, and some of them are followers. Just like when you got JB. Boy, a lot of your friends did not feel called to do foster and adoption. But boy, they were there with everything you ever needed. And they have been all the way along. And so I think we're either an initiator or a volunteer. But sitting on the bench really diminishes your quality of life. Getting in the ball game, and I thought Mike would like this, either as a quarterback or a kicker, it doesn't make any difference. But God calls us. God has a plan for every person as long as they have sound mind. And the happiest we are in our lives is we are when we're in the center of his will. That doesn't mean it's easy. You and I both know that. In ministry, it's hard sometimes. But there's nothing more worthwhile than being in the center of his will, obeying him, doing what he asks. The rewards are incredible. And I would just say, if anybody, you know, God, he prepares us. He doesn't just say, go do that, and then leaves us hanging out in the wind. He prepares us, or he guides us along the way. You know, he is our shepherd. And so I would just say, yes, jump in there. I want to use this quote. You know, a really good friend of ours, Jerry Sawyer, died last year very suddenly while his wife was having surgery. And Jerry, we were good friends with him in El Paso. He was my Sunday school director and on and on and on. But his son-in-law did his funeral. And at his funeral, his son-in-law made this statement. He says, I heard my father-in-law pray hundreds of times. And at the end of every prayer, he always said, Lord, when you call, let me be the first one to step up and say yes. Hmm. And I love that. And Jerry did. But I think, you know, look at the life he led. Look at the life that God allows us. If we step up and say, yes, Lord, I will. Scared to death. Yeah. You know, I didn't want to do this today. I'm scared. I don't want your ratings to fall or whatever. But
well, yeah. My pastor, Libin, always says, God moves at the pace of your next yes. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to look around and be like, well, man, these people are doing all these things. And I mean, am I not good enough? Why is God not using me? Well, maybe it's just a yes a lot of times. And I think I do say this in the book, but I use the analogy. When Mike was editing the book, he's like, you need a sports analogy right here, which is so Mike, right? Always a sports analogy. But he said, when it comes to doing these hard things and getting off the bench, he said, think of the professional athlete. You know, they're sitting on the bench and they've waited their whole life to have a moment to go in the game. And when the coach calls them, they're not like, oh, I don't know, I'm not sure I'm qualified enough. Oh, somebody told me I'm not good. Somebody's better. I don't know. They have a better reputation. Or do you don't know my past? No, like they're ready to get in the game. Their number was called. And like our number is called daily to do the things. It's not going into a sporting event, but daily we're called to love people well, to shepherd our kids, to be kind to a neighbor, to spend time in God's word. Like, you know, we're getting called off the bench and this is our chance while there's breath in our lungs to do the things God has. And so thank you and Dad for modeling that well and for all the horrible things I said about you in the book. Really,
we're still praying for you. We still feel like there's hope for you.
All right, we're going to wrap up. Is there anything that you wanted to share that we didn't get to? You guys, I wish you could see her notes. I scared her to death. She's got like 2 pages of notes front and back. Yes, there they are. Anything else you want to share with us? Did we cover it all?
I think we did. I just, you know, bottom line is we live in a hard time. And prayer is our best access to God. And, you know, he is there and he will help us. And some days we do well, some days we don't. in your marriage, in your parenting. When you make the mistakes, ask God to redeem your mistakes and move on and do better next time and enjoy it.
Yeah. Any other stories you need to share with them? This is your last chance. Anything embarrassing you need to tell them?
How long do I have?
Right. Was there any other childhood story we need to rehab?
You remember that every year you would plan with your friends that you would ditch school one day out of the year. And you would. And this was, of course, before cell phones. And so, but you would go to somebody's house and you would call me at the office and say, "Mom, I want you to know I'm ditching school today." And what would I say?
I think the gist of it was like, "Well, I don't agree with it, but thank you for letting me know."
Yes, exactly. And I didn't. But you always, and it was so funny. I've told people that, you know, that you, and of course, then there's the McDonald's Happy Meal thing. You know, we drove through and said condiments on request, and you thought it said condoms on request. You know, they put them in Happy Meals.
And I was so astounded. I'm like, what? And apparently that was the beginning of Miss Wade. The piano teacher maybe was on to something. I couldn't even read the sign of McDonald's. Yeah.
But anyway, lots and lots of laughs and fun and proud of what you do, Cynthia. So proud of who you are and your family.
Well, thanks, Mom. Well, thanks for coming on and supporting. And thanks for, nobody buys more books than my mom. If it ever makes a bestsellers list, then you just know that my mom and dad sold their house to buy books.
That's right. You know, if you want to contribute, you start a fund. No.
GoFundMe for Dorothy's books that she buys.
Your books are good. They really have a message. They really have an incredible message.
Well, thank you, Mom. All right. Thanks for coming on. Hey, did I tell you, Mom, that my friend Stephanie came on and then I did one show by myself in this whole series. And then I reached out to our youth director that was there when I was in junior high at church. Haven't talked to him in however many years. I think I saw him at a funeral for 30 seconds, but I haven't talked to him in 15, 20, 25 years. He's coming on next. So that'll be a hoot.
Okay. Asking who won at Spoons.
Okay.
You remember that?
One party
we had at our house when he became youth minister and we were all playing spoons, it came down to him and me. And he looked at me like, I don't know whether I should win or not. So ask him about spoons.
I will. Thank you. All right. Cynthia. Thanks for being here, Mom.
Love you.
I mean, isn't she hilarious? Don't you love my mom? If you know my mom in real life, you really, really love her. As all my friends say, I hit the jackpot on moms. She cooks so well, and she always drops off food. She'll help clean up our house. She takes care of kids. She's watching my dog at the moment. Just the best. So I'm so grateful for my mom and dad, and especially thankful that my mom was willing to come on the podcast. So hope you enjoyed it. Would you please share it with a friend? Help get our show even more people that are listening. And then if you haven't ordered a copy of How'd I Miss That, now's a chance to do that. It's coming out in about 2 weeks. All right, you guys, thanks for being here and thanks for being a part of the Mesmerized family. You're the very best.